when you're able to take that sacred pause, step away from the noise, and then just put one foot in front of the other from a place of zero judgment and just operate from there, you'll be freaking amazed what you can do.
Welcome to the latest episode of the Live Into Your Brilliance podcast, the place where we shine a light onto the innate brilliance of humanity and have a lot of fun blowing up the illusions that get in our way. I'm delighted to say that I am not in my office in Manchester today. I get to say that I'm traveling a little bit. I'm in Washington, D.C. I'm going to be speaking at an event for the next couple of days. So first time in D.C., I'm going to be off to see the White House after this podcast and do the tourist things before getting into the gig tomorrow. And as always, I'm joined by my brother from another mother, Mr. Mark Billows Bilby, who is still in South Africa. Billows, how are you doing today?
Hello, my friend. Great to see you and glad you arrived safely in Washington. And I'm jealous. Washington is a gorgeous city. And you got the Smithsonian. You've got obviously the Pennsylvania Avenue. You've got the Lincoln Memorial, the Vietnam Memorial. That whole walk up to the White House is spectacular. So, yeah, you're going to have lots of fun. Are the blossoms out yet, or is it too early?
The honest answer is I don't know because I've not left my hotel yet. So I will find out this evening. I've got my walking boots on. I was talking to a woman on the airplane, though, coming over, and she was saying she thinks the blossoms are out because they've started to come out earlier and earlier. So even though they don't typically come out till April, she said she thinks that they've started to come early. So hopefully I'll get to see that later on as well, which would be nice.
Nice. So you're getting the full show. That's fantastic. Yeah, I'm still in beautiful Cape Town, and it's been magnificent. And I did the Argus, it's not called the Argus Cycle Tour anymore. It's called the Cape Town Cycle Tour. Did that on Sunday, which was a 109-kilometer circular route around the whole of the Cape Peninsula. And I'm just saying this to any listener, like if you own a mountain bike, a gravel bike, or a road bike, or an e-bike, and you fancy doing an iconic bike ride around one of the most beautiful peninsulas in the world, I highly, highly recommend the Cape Town Cycle Tour. I cannot say enough good things about it. It is magnificent. And the spirit on the road and the people cheering, the Rainbow Nation came out in force to cheer on hundreds of thousands of cyclists, and it was magnificent. So had a very good weekend.
Yeah, no, I saw some pictures. It looked incredible. I'm going to be doing it with you next year, which I'm excited about. And just in the spirit of what you just said, I will just share what I shared with you a second ago. You know, if we want to live epic lives, then we got to do epic things. And, you know, sometimes we get into our heads and be like, oh no, I can't do that. But it's like, if you're drawn to do it, then check out the dates and just slot it in your diary right now. And then hopefully we might be hanging out with some folks as we cycle around the Cape next year. That would be pretty cool.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, it was amazing because like a mate of ours who we haven't seen for ages, Jason, came all the way from Arizona. Our friend Johan, who was a colleague of ours at Mimecast. He was out here and he cycled it. So, you know, people came from far and wide. I mean, he came all the way from the UK, Jason from Arizona. I mean, there were so many international riders. It was spectacular. And then obviously all the local knuckleheads and beautiful souls were all present and riding. And it was just, it was a spectacular day. But the I'll tell you a funny thing. So we didn't do a hell of a lot of training for this thing, but we did some. But you know, in Boston during the winter, it's tough to get out on the road. So we were on the Peloton and we were doing like 2 hour sessions on the Peloton to try to get the legs as strong as possible. But we kind of like we fell off, and then obviously we went to Costa Rica for that celebration and we did the podcast from there. And then we all got the lurgy in Costa Rica. So like that kind of wiped out some training, But Vanessa kind of snuck in a few sneaky sessions. When we were in KwaZulu-Natal, she was sneaking off to the gym while I was working, and she was cranking out a few miles. Anyway, we get to just before the halfway point. And so we've cycled through the beautiful seaside communities of Musenberg and Fishhook and Colt Bay and Simonstown. And we get to Smitswinkel, which is the first sort of climb, and you cross the mountains or the spine that goes down the peninsula, and you drop down onto the other side, and then you properly on the Atlantic side. And I say to Vanessa, like, hey baby, just tuck in behind me, and I'll draft you up this hill. And she just smokes me, just goes straight past and just crushes me, gets to the top of the hill. So I'm like, okay. And you know, I'm just saying I'm conserving my energy. That's fine, because she's obviously come out with guns blazing and she's going to pay for it later. That's fine. So we go down Smitswinkel. It's a long, beautiful downhill from Smitswinkel all the way down to Misty Cliffs in Scarborough. I had to stop because I was cramping. So she just patiently waited for me. I ate 25 bars and drank 13 liters of Coke and then carried on. And then we get to Chapman's Peak, which is this iconic kind of sea cliff ride. And I'm like, okay, stick with me. I'll pull you up Chapman's. Let's go. Eventually, she was so far ahead of me, she was able to get off her bike, photograph the scenery, and then film me coming over the peak of Chapman's. And she was giggling and laughing and pointing. And then the last major hill of the race is Sekebosi, which is a nasty, legendary hill that climbs out of Hout Bay and that's your last big climb before you kind of motor all the way down to the end. And she says to me, I want to do Sekebosi with you. Let's go. So I said, sure. So I get into my easiest gear and I start cranking. She's in her easiest gear and she just takes off again. So I'm like, mother trucker. So I get about halfway up Sekebosi and she has stopped on Sekebosi and she's smiling. And then she rides with me again up the rest of Sekebosi and still leaves me and gets to the top. And then to make matters even worse, for the last 10Ks of the race, we thought we were behind our friends, Jason and Rob and Greg. And so, and James. So we were like, okay, we're gonna drop the hammer. So I get into my toughest gear with my long legs and I start cranking. Vanny's on my wheel. We're cruising through Sea Point and Mully Point and all those places down to the end, and we cross the line holding hands, and in the official time, Vanessa's 0.1 of a second faster than me.
Well, I'm sure there's a moral in there, but like, the clock don't lie. I think the clock knew that it had to give Vanessa her dues.
Yeah. Well, my ego was I just got one giant punch in the ego. And it was very good for me, very good. But I am going to train very hard. And secretly, I'm going to train very hard and I'm going to smoke her next year.
Next year, you want to say, just slot in behind me there and then just take off. And she'll be like, well, I'm not getting any. But I love the fact that your ego wasn't prepared to put itself to one side after the first time. You were like, oh, that must have been an aberration. Clearly, on this second hill, I will take her up Chapman's or whatever it was called. I love that. I would love to see the look on your face just as Vanessa cruised past you. Very funny, very funny. So, mate, I know that you have been up to some good deeds whilst you've been in South Africa. You mentioned them on last week's episode as well about some of the things you've been up to, and I believe it's triggered kind of a topic you'd like to put on the table today. So maybe you can share with us what it is you're seeing, and we can take off. And I shall try and I'll just get on your wheel for this conversation. I promise I won't leave you behind.
You know, I'm gonna entitle this podcast The Rat Catcher, because I'm the best rat catcher in the southern suburbs at the moment, and I'll explain why in a second. But this is quite topical, and you know, friends of ours, Mandy and Steve, and others, are dealing with elderly parents right now, and so I think there are a lot of people who listen to this whose parents are in different states of health. Some have passed away. Some are really struggling with anxiety, depression. I think a lot of people's parents are struggling with, mental decay, so Alzheimer's, and my mom has vascular dementia. Vanessa's mom has Alzheimer's, and so it's a really interesting moment of reflection, and I think a lot of it has to do with gratitude. And you know, I was actually chatting to a friend of mine, Kudusela, on a call earlier before jumping on the podcast, and he was saying it's very different when you're trying to do this stuff, looking at photos or FaceTime feeds, and then trying to direct things remotely versus actually showing up and doing this stuff yourself. And you know, we've got friends, you know, I mentioned Mandy and Steve. Like, Steve has been through this with his dad recently, and he got on a plane, he came down here, and he got stuck in and made sure that his parents were comfortable, and very blessed that he could do that, because obviously financially there's a cost to a lot of this stuff, and a lot of people don't have the luxury of getting in care, or, you know, operating at a 20-to-1 exchange rate, or, you know, whatever. But money aside, I don't know, there's just something that sort of emerged for us. We were acutely aware that this job had to be done. We had to go, and we knew that there was a challenge with the house, and Vanessa's parents are hoarders, or her mother in particular was a hoarder and is a hoarder. But because of her Alzheimer's now, she's not very mobile. She's not unhappy, but I think a lot of the time she doesn't quite know where she is. And the house has kind of fallen into disrepair, and they've had this infestation of rats. And the rats have just moved in, because guess what? It's party time, because there's just bags and bags of gorgeous material that they can just shred into confetti and just make cozy nests and squirrel themselves away and live a pretty decent life in these rooms that have remained dark and locked for years. And so Vanny and I knew that we had a task on our hands, and I'm not saying dreading it, but we knew that it was going to be tough emotionally and tough physically. But I don't think we realized how physically demanding it would be to basically blitz and go through an entire house and 5 decades worth of stuff and do stuff and clear out and just create a sense of light and a sense of space and just make people happy. But I've been observing the kind of process and being very aware of just creating an experience of life as we've gone through this. I don't know how it happened, mate, but we fell into this interesting kind of rhythm. On the first morning, it was the Saturday morning that we were going to go and tackle the house for the first time. We drove down the road, and there was a hardware store where we went in and we bought black bags and we bought gloves and we bought spray and, you know, all the stuff we knew we would need. And across the road was a halal coffee shop. It's actually, I think it's a Brazilian chain called Vida. And so we just said, oh, let's just grab a coffee. And we went in, the staff were awesome. And we just sat, and it was a beautiful Cape Town morning. We sat on the patio and we had our coffee and then off we went, and we kind of got to the house, and it was super overwhelming, but we just got stuck in and we just went for it. And Vanessa's brother was amazing. And he lives there and he was super helpful. And you could see, like, Vanessa's dad was a little apprehensive because he wasn't quite sure if we were going to be sort of judicious enough in our or selective enough in our cleaning out and preserve all the things that he wanted to preserve. But I think he soon saw that we were on the right track, and he got stuck in, and so there was this good energy started to build. And then the next day we did the same thing, and we went to our coffee, and then we would go and tackle the day. And every day that we've done it, we've gone to the same little coffee shop, bar one morning we tried a different coffee shop and it wasn't the same. We've gone to our favorite little coffee shop, and it's a hole-in-the-wall coffee shop. It's nothing special, but lovely because it's super diverse. And we go in, we get our coffee, we sit down, the staff are awesome. And it's kind of like our little moment of calm before we go and tackle the job. And no matter how ugly and how disgusting things got at times, I think we were both quite conscious of just being there and creating an experience of what I'm sure for a lot of people is an absolute freaking nightmare. And we just created an experience where we got the job done. And today, you know, 10 days later, we finished the last room. And then I went off to a local store. I bought some lovely things for lunch. And we just sat around in the beautiful sunlight that was now streaming through the window. Windows were open. We sat at a table that hadn't been sat at for God knows how many years, and we had lunch around the table, and there was immense sense of gratitude and a sense of pride. Like, everybody, like, the house looks amazing, and it's been restored and decluttered and cleaned, and it smells good, and there's this just this strong sense of accomplishment as well. But I think if Vanessa was on this call right now, she would say she feels immense gratitude, and as do I, for the opportunity to do what we did, despite how gruesome it was. And it's funny, and the reason I'm kind of putting this on the air for people to think about is, it goes to the very heart of what you and I talk about, like this ability to live in your consciousness, live in your awareness, and create an experience of life that you want to create. And if it was a true outside, you know, inside out kind of manifestation, it was. I don't think we could have done it any other way, and it certainly wasn't traumatic.
Well, it's like a hell of a story or a reflection. I think what came to mind, a bunch of things came to mind, different words, but I think what I'd love to start just in reflecting back is it highlights to me the choice that's available, and it's a choice about where we put our attention. And what's, like, a credit to you and Vanessa is been so mindful about the choice. You know, because it's not like you didn't say, oh no, we rocked up and we just cruised through it. And but like you said, there was moments when you go there, it's like, whoa, this is overwhelming. But then it was still the choice to go, okay, and to be present. And then what strikes me in it is, you know, there's the act, things you are doing, which fucking not necessarily things that people would choose to go, love to fill my Tuesday with getting rat nests out of my parents' house or, you know, clearing out like some horrible stuff. But your attention wasn't on that. That's what you were doing. It strikes me that your attention was on, attention was on your true intention behind it, which was that you and Vanessa wanted to do this for her parents. And you wanted to do it for them. And there's a part in this which I think is really important. And I guess you wanted to do it for yourselves. And so there's that, like, there's being present to that. And I think it's so powerful to hear what happens when we put our attention in the present moment and we put our attention in what lies beyond the circumstances or what lies beyond the job at hand. Because then we have a whole different experience. And I'm sure, I'm going to ask you a question, but I'm pretty sure that you didn't enjoy every part of the process. But maybe I'm wrong. You'll say, no, we did. But
No, I definitely didn't. I mean, there were times, mate, when I wanted to gag. I mean, I was like, holy shit. Like, you know, when you discover an old abandoned rat's nest or you find a few dead rats because unfortunately the exterminator had been in and a few of the rats had eaten the poison. And I mean, you could smell them the one morning when we walked in. And there were some very unpleasant moments, but you're right. The intention behind what we were doing. And I'll tell you a funny story. So Vanessa's brother, Mark, lives at home and he's a great guy. Very bright. But he works. So he wasn't around, to help us during the week. And so, and we would generally get there before 8, before he went off to work. And we'd sort of get the instructions for the day and then we would blitz things. And then we'd normally be done by, you know, lunchtime, 2 o'clock, like that was all we could manage. And then I had work calls and things and the US was coming online. But it was funny. The one day we said to him, do you mind if we give your room a go over? And he said, no, please do. Cause actually, you know, he wasn't sleeping in his old room. He was sleeping in a different room. So we went for it and we did a great job and made it look fantastic and got it all ready. And it was this gorgeous bookcase and quite a large bookcase. And this beautiful bust that Vanessa's mum, who was very artistic, she was a great illustrator as well. And she illustrated a lot of South African books. She did a book on snakes and she did some cookbooks and all sorts of things. But as part of her artistic prowess, she had made this bust of this female, and it was quite a large thing. Anyway, we get a message later in the day and it's from Mark and he's like, thank you so much for the incredible job you did on my room. It looks fantastic. I can't believe it. But I'm just curious, where did that bookcase come from and where did the bust come from? And we just burst out laughing because they were in the freaking room and we were like, fuck me. There was so much stuff in the room. The poor guy just didn't know that there was this gorgeous bookcase, which we filled with all these lovely books that we found in boxes, and this very artistic, gorgeous bust. that Vanessa's mom had made. And so we were able to bring it all to life for him. And he was just so grateful. But it was so funny to us that it had been in the room all that time. And he hadn't realized.
Yeah, well, like, is that maybe the best metaphor you've ever heard for the truth of the human experience? Like, so much shit flies around inside our heads. And like, when we have our quiet moments, we go, whoa, where was this? And you're like, oh, it was here all along. Like, this experience that you guys had, it's like, it's there all along. But to your point, and neither you nor I are claiming to be immune from this. And I know that you are not either. It's like, it's so easy to get wrapped up in the stories and the resistance. You know, and it's so natural. Like, these are our parents, and it's like, we don't want them to be getting old, and we do, you know, we can have easily fall into resistance that they shouldn't be sick, and, you know, and why was Vanessa's mom hoarding or any of these? And it's like, it's all just noise. And when you strip it back, there's still a beautiful experience of life being there. Just, it, none of it matters. Like, that, you know, Vanessa's mom and everything has happened the way it's meant to happen, you know, and I just love that. Like, that beautiful bust in the bookcase is life, and all the crap and the stuff around it is thought and story. And you know, you and Vanessa did a beautiful job on cleaning out Mark's room. It's like, wow, didn't even know this was here. And I think there's so much more available to us. And I think it's what's so alluring about life is that, you know, actually, you know, in the present moment, there's so much more to be had. And yet the trick is the mind is to want to take us off into other places and to get caught up with the future and the past. And actually, in these talks I'm doing, it's one of the things that I'm doing too. But one of them is, it's all about, like, dream big and play bigger. One of the pieces that I talk about is, like, to be great at anything, we must drive our attention to the present moment. And I think, like, to be great at living, really living, and to be great at creating the experience you would love to have for yourself, it's all in the present moment. It's like, it's all there unless you're resisting the present moment. You know, it's why, you know, sometimes there's beauty in death. And there's beauty in suffering, and there's beauty in joy, and there's it's like there's beauty in every part of life if you can be present to it. I don't know. Would you say? Yeah, maybe it's the lifelong learning experience. Like, it feels like we're born and we are super present as babies and young children, and then we forget, and we spend the rest of our lives relearning how to just be present to what is. And I don't know, it strikes me that when people talk about dying, you know, the five regrets of the dying or whatever, it's right at the beginning and right at the end. It's the easiest it ever will be to be super present, because it's like the right at the beginning and right at the end. And everything in the middle is forgetting, remembering, forgetting, remembering. If you now, having gone through this, like, what insights would you say that you're taking out of it, that maybe, like, what's new and fresh for you in this? That is there something you've not seen before, or that you're seeing more deeply than ever before? Like, what, take us a little bit further into potentially what you're seeing here, or if there's another place you'd like to riff off it.
I think it kind of goes to what you just said, that there is beauty in suffering. And what I would add to that as well, because I think, you know, for the listener who may be going through the same thing with their parents, and I know a lot of people, particularly in our friendship circle, they're in very similar situations with their parents, or maybe a loved one or what have you, is there is such, when you strip it all away and you let go of your narrative and you let go of your attachments to anger and to a sense of injustice and the sense of being wronged by the universe, or, you know, whatever you carry with you, and you do fall into your awareness and you give in to the great unfolding, then there is immense beauty and humor in the suffering that is around you. And like with Vanessa's parents this week, you know, we laughed a lot, particularly with her dad and with her brothers. You know, her two brothers came and helped process some of the stuff. But there was a... And then like on Sunday night, the family tradition is you get together and they cook a meal and they watch a movie. And her dad loves the old Westerns. But you're just sitting in this quiet space, and there's and when you allow yourself to be present to that moment of just sitting in a room with a person who, you know, probably doesn't even know what she's watching on TV or who's actually in the room. Her dad, who loves having his family around and loves watching his cowboy movies. Her brothers, there was immense beauty in just sitting in that moment. So much so that I was determined we weren't going to stay for the movie because I was exhausted, and we stayed for the entire movie because I was just so content just sitting quietly, just being in that moment. But throughout the days, you know, her dad was sort of hovering around and he was making comments, and he's got a great sense of humor. And so we were laughing about some of the stuff, you know, you know, I'd ask him if he'd like to keep some of the rats as pets, and he was, they were just, you know, you fell into this place where you could be comfortable being uncomfortable, and you could see that you could come at it from a place of love, and so you could see the humor and the light and the beauty of the situation. And it was funny, you know, we even the guys who came with the junk truck and came and collected all the stuff, like we just made a lovely connection with them because they came four times. And, you know, we met these lovely guys and learned about their lives. And one of the guys was, you know, he worked in the post office. He was a federal employee. He lost his job when they closed the post office, and now he was working in junk removal. And he told us his story, and like there was just this lovely curiosity that was present because we were present. And I'm not trying to romanticize what was a shitty job, and I'm not trying to romanticize a what I think for a lot of people is a very, very tough period in their lives, and particularly when you see your parents sort of walking down the back nine and you know that death is imminent. It's not a great place to be, but there is great beauty in suffering, and we need to learn how to suffer beautifully. And I hope that anybody listening can listen to this and go, well, my parents aren't hoarders. They don't have a rat and flea infestation in their house. They are elderly. They are struggling. And I too can find great beauty in these moments with them, in this suffering. Like it's you don't have to hit rock bottom to see the opportunity for living in that place of full awareness and love, and be able to see the humorous side and be able to see the loving side, and yeah, the tears will flow. Like, and when the tears flow, let them flow. Let them flow. Let it all pour out, but do it from a place of surrender to the unfolding, not from a place of anger, resentment, sense of injustice, judgment. And that was the one thing that I will say, and I'm keen to blow this up, because the one thing that we didn't do, and I'm not saying we are special because we didn't do it, like this is part of the practice, this is what you have to put into play, is we did not judge these people. And it just is. And the lack of judgment allowed us to operate freely from curiosity, love, and awareness. And it made all the difference. And I was that was a big thing that stood out for me. So I'd say those are the two things. That's a long-winded answer to your question, but those two things. Like, there's great beauty in suffering, and you can always see the funny side, for sure. You have to see the funny side. And then the second piece is when you don't come at this from a place of judgment, then you allow yourself to come at it from a very different, loving, fully aware place, which allows you to tap into the humor, allows you to tap into the beauty.
No. Well, I didn't find it long-winded. I found it a beautiful answer. A distinction though emerges for me, which is that, and maybe it is, you know, I don't know. As you were talking, I was like, I'm not sure that's beauty and suffering. Because it now makes me think, no, there's a difference there. Like, it's suffering to my mind is in, like, judgment feels like suffering to me. Like, when we're in judgment, we suffer. And there's no humor in judgment. Like, there'd be no laughing with Vanessa's dad if you were lost to judging him and his wife for, like, having created. Like, that would be the judgment. Why did you do all this? You created this mess and we're having to clean it up. And there's the suffering, you know. It's when we're in that. I think for me, it's like, it's the beauty. So I'm not sure there's beauty in suffering in one regard. I think we've no choice in pain, but suffering is optional. You know, the first arrow and the second arrow. The first arrow hurts. And you've no choice in that. Like, it just hurts. Like, our parents get sick. That hurts. We have to do stuff that's not very nice. That hurts. You're like, ah. And then the suffering is like what we might wrap around it. And what I don't know what the word is I'm looking for, but it's like, it is something to do with the beauty. It's like the dark beauty and the light beauty, and there's beauty in all of life. That's what strikes me. It's just that when we let go of all that, that's when we get to experience it, like having the laugh. I think about an Irish wake. You know, you go to a funeral and it's people go, but like the suffering, and you're like, no, actually at a wake, it's funny. It's like, yes, there's a lot of sadness, and there's a lot of, there's melancholy. There's so much beauty in remembering and in those moments and laughter. You know, I think it's one of the, it's a great, like, it's not just Irish people, but I do think we're pretty damn good at waking someone. and you remember those. Like, I remember my granddad's funeral. You know, he had, like, he left his mark in the world. He had 13 children, and he had 60-odd grandchildren, and I think it was, like, I can't remember the exact number, like, double figures, great-grandchildren, all walking behind his funeral. But I still remember, I only remember, like, all of the stories and the different things. And you go, it was at a sad time, yeah, but it's just, it's interesting to kind of get beyond the stories. And I think what I hear so much in this, it's like there is a choice. And, you know, sometimes we're lost to our suffering and sometimes we come back. But I think what this story is helping me see, it's like, but being more mindful of the choice, being more mindful of accepting, just accepting, this is life, you know. It unfolds how it unfolds. And, you know, the fundamental choice that I believe exists for all of us is to go with the flow of life or resist it. And in resistance lies suffering, and in going with the flow is the beauty. And I was talking to someone just before coming on this call, and we were talking about, you know, the future. And the biggest challenge with going with the flow, I think, is the fact that we don't know where it's going to lead. But there's another big opportunity. It's like, oh, I don't know. Falling in love with not knowing and being. You know, being the primary thing we've got. Well, I guess I'll be in this moment and see what's here. And I think you are light years ahead of me on this, on being able to put that into practice so beautifully. You know, I think you're an incredible role model in this. And I'm not saying this to blow smoke up your ass. I just think it's you and Vanessa, and the story is, I would hold it up there as one of those like beacons to me, to the listeners, be like, ah, oh, that's what it looks like. And the reason I say this is because, and I mean this in the way that it comes out, is because you and Vanessa are not special. It's not like that you've got something that I don't have. It's just, I think you are being so much more purposeful in your practice than the vast majority of people.
It's funny you say that, because when we were flying out, one of the conversations we had was, how are we going to cope? How are we going to get through this? And then we kind of both laughed because we were like, this has been put in our path because this is the practice.
But I don't know. I hope, as you listen to this, that I just hope that comes across as like such a clear chime that just gone off. It's like, ah, this has been put in our path. And this is the practice. Well, ain't that the truth right there? Oh, this has been put in our path. And the path is the practice. And we don't get to decide in it. We don't even freaking know, like, why it's been put in the path. Just has. But here we are, 10 days later, 10 days down, further down the path. It's like, oh, there it is. But you couldn't have known that before walking it.
No. And the interesting thing is, and I'm seeing this more and more, that when you step away from the noise and you embrace the unfolding, the great unfolding, and you see the path as the practice, and you become aware more and more, you're aware that the path is the practice. You're able to cope with things that you never thought you'd be able to cope with. number one. I think a lot of the anxieties that we ship with when we try to meet life head on, they become significantly dissipated. I'm not saying all anxiety just disappears. That's not fair to anybody. But they become significantly less. But one of the interesting things about it is, and this is a bit of a paradox that I'm still trying to wrap my head around, is we are all on such unique journeys, and we share our experience together, you know, if you've got a partner and or with mates or what have you, but we're all on such a unique journey. And it is in many ways our story, our journey, our path and our practice, but it's not about you. And that is one of the weirdest things that I've come to see, particularly in the last 10 days, is this had nothing to do with us. This is not like, okay, this is Van and Billows' story and, you know, they're going to show up and they're going to kind of parachute in and they're going to do their thing and da 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 da. It was, at no point was this ever about me and Vanessa. And because fortunately we came at it from that place, I think that's where the lack of judgment came in. I think this profound sense of being in service, which I equate to being in love, being, you know, operating from a place of love, being curious, all of that just was front and center. And that was, yeah, that made all the difference. It made all the difference. And I bet you if Vanny was here now, she would put the same ingredients on the table and say, yeah, that's how I managed to get through this. Because she was really nervous about this, understandably, because this is her family. This is what she knew was going, something she had to deal with at some point. But I think those were the ingredients. And so I'm putting that on the table because, again, in the spirit of practice, for you, the listener, when you're able to step away from the noise, take that sacred pause, step away from the noise, embrace the great unfolding, and then just put one foot in front of the other from a place of zero judgment, just from love, curiosity, a profound sense of presence, and just operate from there and go with the flow, to use your words. Like, you'll be freaking amazed what you can do. You can become a master rat catcher from that place. And it won't bother you, even if you have a profound phobia of rodents.
Oh man, I do. I love that. I do, and you point to the paradox is real. It's not you, and it's not you. So it's like that's what makes it confusing. But I think it's the come from. It's like it's either when it's all about you, it's egoic. I'm doing this because. And when it's not egoic, it's like, I'm doing this because I'm doing this. And it feels different. And, you know, it always comes back to that thing. It's in the feeling of it. It's not in the thinking of it. We all know the feeling of coming from that place. And that's what touched me there as you spoke. It's like, it's not you, and it's not you, but it's a come from totally different, and it's all about love. And you know, and I'm going to put down a teaser for an episode that I want us to have. It all starts with loving yourself, and I would love for us to have another episode, and I'd love for us to invite a former guest back on, Lindsay Kapp, because she has been talking to me about this in a conversation recently, saying that's the number one thing. Once we unconditionally love ourselves, like all of us, then all of the other shit just falls away. And we then, because we are deeply in love with the truth of who we are, then we find it so much easier to love other people, to love life, and to be love in the world. And I say this, and I mean it as a friend who loves you dearly, and Vanessa, like that is what this story is all about for me, really. That's what today's episode, in many ways, is. You're putting the possibility of, like, being love in the world, and when you are being that in the moment, everything that's possible from there, the joy, the laughter, the gratitude, you know, that sense of connection, the impact that you have on other people, but it's the most powerful thing, is huge. And yet I think it starts with having that deep internal love of self, and I think you've got that. I really do. That's what I see, and that is, often we go off and we try and do all this work outside of ourselves, and it's like, no, it really is do the inner work first, and then the outer stuff becomes so much more joyous. But mate, I feel like the bumper sticker responsibility has to come to you this week, because this has been such a powerful for me, and I hope as you listen to this, you know, I hope it's as powerful as it has been for me. But I would love to know what off the back of this would be your bumper sticker for life.
I'm gonna put two in the room this week. So the first one is a bastardization of one of your famous sayings, which is, it's always down to you, only 100% of the time. That's, am I getting that right? That's one of your sayings, right? So my bumper sticker adaptation of that one would be, it's always down to you, only 100% of the time. But it's never about you. So that's number one. And then number two is, embrace your inner rat catcher.
I know, I would have been really disappointed if we didn't have a bumper sticker with rat catcher on it. So I love both of those. The first one as a, like, really kind of connect, and the second one does as well. Like, it's embrace your inner rat catcher. That's cool, man. This has been a super, super conversation. I feel like I feel really connected to you in this moment, and so feeling a lot of gratitude for you and love for you. So thank you, my friend.
Likewise, brother. Thank you. These podcasts are therapy for me. They allow me to see what I've always known, but just to be able to share it and meander and follow and pull on the threads and see where it leads just brings a profound sense of clarity it's good stuff. So thank you, and lots of love to you too.
All right, people. The Kenny Bilby Love Fest has to come to a close now. Hope you've enjoyed listening, and that it has sparked some insights that blossom over the coming days. We would love more questions, topics, so we'll be putting out a call for those on social media. But if you're listening and you have something, please fire it over WhatsApp, LinkedIn, email, however you see fit. We would really appreciate that. If you like it, please, as always, you know, we'd love, please like, comment, subscribe, share. If there's anything in here that touches one person and has an impact on their lives, that's all we care about. So please spread the word if it's something that you feel could benefit anybody else. And until next week, much love. Keep living into your brilliance. We will talk to you again soon.
Thank you for joining us on this enlightening journey, unraveling the innate brilliance within every human being. We hope today's episode has sparked new thoughts and inspired fresh perspectives. Remember, the power to shatter illusions and unleash your true potential lies within you. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review us on your favorite platform. If you'd like more insights and daily doses of inspiration, you can follow me on Instagram at @AlKennyCoaching. Or you can connect with myself and Mark on LinkedIn, where we will share articles and perspectives about unlocking your innate brilliance. Remember, you are capable of extraordinary things. Keep believing, keep exploring, and keep shining brightly. Take care and stay brilliant.